Chris in Tennessee, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down. Gonna stand my ground, won't be turned around. And I'll keep this world from dragging me down. Gonna stand my ground, and I won't back down.
Hey everyone, welcome to Nowhere to Run. My name is Chris. Thank you for tuning in. However you found the show, whether on iTunes or the Revelations Radio Network or Revere Radio Network, thank you. Thank you for tuning in. We've got a ton to do today, so I'll just get started. The first thing on my notes here I have is aspartame. And I just wanted to spend a little time on aspartame because it's just one of these things that I just feel really strongly about. Aspartame, if you don't know, is the artificial sweetener used in pretty much every diet drink. Sometimes diet drinks will use something called Acflame or something like that to kind of, or NutraSweet or something like that, but it's all the same thing, just under different trade names and such. But and does the same thing as far as excitotoxins, but it is, in my opinion, it's one of the primary, if not the major problem with health in this country for sure, in the world, I guess. It is awful. I have just had a lot of run-ins recently with people that whose lives are ruined and totally because of this drink. It's highly addictive, so a lot of people are very much addicted to aspartame. But I did a lot of research on it recently, trying to convince somebody, or just doing the research to try to convince them. Sometimes people don't want to hear it, and I'm not the one to tell them in that scenario, you know. But a lot of times they do. It's one of these things that I always just feel like I'll go tell anybody about aspartame. I rarely walk up to somebody in the supermarket and tell them 9/11 was an inside job, but aspartame, I will pretty much say it to anybody that comes my way that I see drinking Diet Coke. I used to carry around an excellent film called Sweet Misery, and I highly recommend that you guys go out there and burn a few copies of Sweet Misery so that you can hand them out in grocery stores or wherever you see somebody drinking Diet Coke, or to your friends and loved ones who, if they drink a lot of it, they definitely got a lot of these ailments. I'll go into that in a second. But and also it'd be good to buy a copy of Sweet Misery because the purchased copies don't, the ones online kind of have a little lag as far as the audio and the video. It's just a little off, so it's kind of annoying. But I still burn those and hand them out. But anyway, so I got an interesting story, a few of them, but let me just first say how awful this is. Aspartame is what's called an excitotoxin, and it's a it causes neurological problems. So it manifests in so many different ways. The FDA is quite aware of all of these problems that it's causing. If you just watch the movie Sweet Misery and find out about the history of it and how, you know, Donald Rumsfeld was literally taken out of government to head this corporation in order to get it past the FDA because it was causing brain tumors and everything that it touched. And so he actually literally had to get Ronald Reagan, whose first order of business in the White House, or one of the first, was to fire the current head of the FDA, hire a new guy, and that new guy's first order of business was to approve aspartame in the face of, you know, all these studies that showed it to be incredibly dangerous. But and then brain cancer increased 500% directly after that, and it's really been downhill ever since. If people drink a lot of Diet Cokes, and a lot of people drink a lot of Diet Cokes because they are very, very addictive. So some people are just very addicted to aspartame, and it manifests in a lot of ways. Certainly a lot of mind fog and memory loss and headaches and things like that that you'd expect from neurotoxins. But because it messes with the nervous system, it manifests in all kinds of ways, like arthritis. Commonly in the knees, but it can be in any kind of your shoulders, your fingers, whatever. People get diagnosed with lupus and Lou Gehrig's disease and multiple sclerosis. If you are drinking a lot of aspartame, you probably have something that your doctor doesn't know what to do with, and that you're getting medicated for. That has nothing to do with it. And it's because the doctor doesn't have in his journals classic aspartame poisoning, but then again, they seem to tell women not to drink it if they're pregnant. So that kind of makes me think, you know, there is something in the journal somewhere saying that it's not good. But really, I just feel so strongly about this because it's so many people needlessly are living lives that they don't have to live because of this damn drink. Okay, let me tell you a quick story about this, a recent providential aspartame thing. I was on a plane, and there was a empty seat next to me, and I thought I was going to get to ride the whole trip, because it was in the middle of the night, back to Nashville with this empty seat. But then the pilot came on the speakers and asked if anybody could give up their seat, because this lady and her child needed to sit together. And I was like, okay, I gotta do that. And right before I could do that, another lady said she'd do it. And she came and sat in the empty seat next to me. And so, during the course of the flight, you know, when the drinks, you know, order, she gets a Diet Coke, and I didn't think anything of it. I mean, I did think a little bit of it, but, I mean, I wasn't gonna say anything. It was in the middle of the night. And the stewardess came by with the drinks. She had her head down, and so she skipped her. And she never ended up getting the Diet Coke, and I could tell she was, like, looking around for it, like, hey, we're, you know, I was like, hey, you know, she came by, blah, blah, blah. And, so anyway, I was still not going to tell her anything about it, because, you know, like I said, it was, like, in the middle of the night and everything. But then the battery on my MP3 player went out a little prematurely, I would think, and I was like, okay, I get it. So I said, you know, you really ought to check into aspartame, blah, 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 blah. And we started having this big conversation, and this is a woman who drank Diet Cokes almost exclusively and drank a lot of them. It was her whole... That she was probably about my age, maybe she was probably about, a good 5-6 years older than I was. But she had so many health problems because of it. She was, I mean, I don't know. She probably was close to having something major happen because of the amount that she drank. I mean, she drank a lot. I mean, that's what she, according to what she was saying. But she had everything. She was having huge mental clarification problems and memory loss and all that stuff. She was telling everybody, you know, this is weird and everything. Had the arthritis, had pretty much everything, I mean, that you can get from it. And so she was very, very glad to hear it, and she ended up being a Christian, and I thought that was cool because I just, you know, had a feeling that's what, I mean, by her, like, giving up her seat and everything and doing that. And then it happened again. I mean, I don't know. It's just one of those things that happened with my friend's uncle that had, again, had been drinking it for 10, 11 years or whatever, and he had health problems just all over the place. Bad eyesight, arthritis, couldn't play guitar anymore, had, you know, all the stuff that goes along with it. And there again, it was the same issue, somebody that drank almost exclusively diet drinks. So it's just something I just loathe. I hope if anybody's out there listening to it, you wouldn't even believe what this stuff causes. I mean, the list of things that this causes, you would not believe. I'll link something in the show notes section of this website that will blow your mind away. This is something I just recently found when I was looking for actual documentation on all this stuff. And the site's called doorway.com, I think, but it's a little tricky to get to it. You could probably type aspartame and doorway. But I want to link you to a particular section in this site that's a little hard to find. I think it's called something like symptoms by disease or something like that. And it has a list of all these symptoms, and then it has right next to it a link to the documentation about it. And it's just phenomenal to show somebody the hard proof of all this stuff, because sometimes it's kind of like, you know, trying to get an alcoholic to quit drinking alcohol for some people. But here's the good news about this. If you stop drinking aspartame, it goes away. All these things you've dealt with for decades will just go away most of the time. In most cases, the stuff that I've read, it seems to be an accumulative thing that will go away. However, because it is such a cause of brain tumors, you may have a brain tumor. And Now, I only know the what I'm about to say from the movie that I've watched, The Sweet Misery, that those people that we're talking about, they had brain tumors, seem to be okay now, once they got it removed. It's not like a malignant kind of tumor because it's caused by drinking aspartame. So if you, but some people, they call it a malignant brain tumor because they continue to drink Diet Cokes afterwards. So, I mean, it's just a big mess. But the moral of the story is, for most people, if you don't have a brain tumor, you can... It, all of these problems will go away, and it, and I'm sure even the brain tumor could go away. I'm not even 100% sure about that, so I'm not going to make any medical claims. but okay, let me take a quick break, and I want to hit another topic.
Russ Dizdar explains his ministry, Shatter the Darkness.
Almost 20 years now, we've been just kind of just trying to help people, minister to people, share with people coming out of cults. You know, just mind control, the occult, left-hand path stuff. And then we ran into the real underground that's been going on for a long time. And so it has a lot to do with deliverance and dealing with the dark side and power encounters. And, you know, it has confronting perpetrators of violence on children and ritual abuse. It deals with healing the hearts of the victims and, you know, keeping our guard and trying to do what we can to expose it, stop some of it.
You can visit Russ Dizdar's website at shatterthedarkness.net, where you'll find hours of free MP3s and podcasts, as well as courses for your church or your ministry to begin to learn how to deal with encounters of this nature in a biblical way. Shatterthedarkness.net.
Revelations Radio Network. Many hosts, one message of salvation. RevelationsRadioNetwork.com.
Okay, guys, you can email me at chris@conspiracyclose.com. That's chris@conspiracyclose.com. And you can go to the websites, which are nowheretorun.podomatic.com and conspiracyclose.com/nowheretorun. I'm going to buy a domain someday soon. It's a lot easier to fit a link to one of those sites. And you can also go to the YouTube site, which is youtube.com/nowheretorun1984, and subscribe to that channel, or add me as a friend, or join in the comment wars that are going on YouTube. Okay, let's get into something that I just want to rant a little bit about, the truth movement, I guess. Something that I thought about this weekend was that the last 7 years or so, since 9/11 and since the internet really came into its own and really had a purpose for kind of a renegade searching for what's really happening and an independent grassroots searching of that, in addition to just general information, it has done something that was never before possible. And I believe it is this ability for us to interact with one another across the globe and in real time, in sharing information, sharing video, documents, pictures, sharing ideas. And, you know, it's just, if you took that 100 years ago, like just in letters, you know, I mean, how slowly was everything? Communication has sped up everything. I think that's pretty obvious, just because you could only do so many things in a day. Now you can do a year's work 100 years ago in maybe 30 minutes. And so it has sped up everything up like that. But what it also has done is it has made it virtually impossible for the elite types to lie to us in various ways anymore. There are certain things that they used to be able to lie to us about, and we would have to basically buy it because we didn't know any better. We had no access to anything different. If we went to the library, we couldn't go to all the libraries that might, you know, contain something to debunk that. And there were always people that knew that they were lying and that showed some manner of proof, but then they didn't really have a way to get their voice heard, and then it would just die a lone voice in the wilderness. And again, they would rein on with whatever lie that they've told. And in a way, that's what we have with the truth movement. It's just the product of a lot of information buzzing back and forth. And so you have, in this last 7 years, an entire realization of what exactly is happening. Well, let's call it in some, but that whole thing has been tempered with a massive effort to direct the awakening, and somehow people don't even think that that's a possibility. That they think that just because they're getting awake, they are beating the system, but it's not. That's not the case. The argument that we've been making on this show is that they're herding that awakening into something that benefits them. And unless you got an idea of exactly what their agenda is, and it doesn't do you any good just to assume that you know the agenda, you got to really figure that one out, because it's the key to understanding what may or may not be a part of that deception or that herding away from it. And then it becomes clear exactly what's happening. But I'm digressing from the point. What the point is that because of this onslaught of information, certain things, specifically, like the let's call it the zeitgeist version of history, but the kind of the Golden Bough Fraser idea of comparative religion thing, 100 years ago, 150 years ago, was, circulated in pseudo-intellectual and very intellectual circles, like, the top universities and things. People believed it as fact, and they had basically not a whole lot of information to really check that out with, even very, very smart people. Now, it was debunked. A lot of that stuff was clearly debunked. Now we can go back and look and see where people were pointing that out with the information they did have. But for the most part, it was almost impossible to debunk. If you wanted to double-check somebody that what we would call nowadays, what J.P. Holding calls throwing the elephant at you, and that is if somebody walks up to somebody that's never heard of any of this stuff and says, oh, didn't you hear? There's a god called Varishna, and he lived 1,200 years before Christ, and he was crucified next to two thieves and rose again on the third day, and all this stuff. Somebody told somebody else that. What would the other person do? They just got the elephant thrown at them. Where are they going to go double-check that fact, And if somebody just claims it's true, without any, of course, any sources, then you have to go do some research to either prove or disprove what that person said. And so you find that in history, in recent history, and I'm calling that like 100 years ago, people kind of bought the elephant for a while. And it's only been really recently, and it's really fueled the entire Antichrist hatred movement, I'll call that. And it's really became what's inside of our schools and everything else. And it created something, well, I'll talk about in a second, this reverse psychology mind thing that they've got going on. It's really a key point. But nowadays, with the information that we have available, we can essentially go to all those libraries. We can find every record of everything that's ever been translated or not translated. You can get the other language version of everything that was ever written about an ancient god. You can find a good deal, if not at least all the ones that are claimed to say something that they don't. You can get those online. And that is a tool to totally debunk this thing that has stood for a long time due to the lack of information. So you have even people like C.S. Lewis. And C.S. Lewis was an incredible guy, brilliant man. He was an atheist for most of his life, I guess, and he was a professor at Oxford in philosophy, both before and after he became a Christian, I believe. And he basically is a very, very intelligent, well, great writer, one of the best ever. But his Christianity was, he was mere Christianity, but he definitely had some baggage, like we all do, in our thinking. But one of the things that appeared that C.S. Lewis has was he believed this kind of Fraser Oxford thing going on about these many myths of the dying and rising sun god thing. And he basically had to believe it, because at that time, at Oxford and other places, you had this Golden Bough mentality of people that had accepted that with no way to double-check it. I mean, Oxford was a hell of a library, I'm sure, but You know, if that was that kind of thing was new, and the way it was presented, and you all know like how something like that it gets presented in the best way possible, like Zeitgeist. I mean, fooled the entire truth movement. Is only now are people starting to you're starting to hear rumbles of, oh yeah, I always knew that was fake. Yeah, that part one, I sure did lie about it. I always knew that. It's like, yeah, right. You bought it hook, line, and sinker. Everybody did. But that's the same kind of thing that went down there, and so now we have this ability for the first time to really, really find out the truth. But we're choosing not to because of this reversed psychology thing that has gone on, which is due to a lot of... Let me try to explain a little bit about that. You will have anybody, I get this all the time, saying how I don't understand anything about anything because I was, you know, brainwashed by, you know, the church or whatever, you know, never stopping to see what if I went to church at all when I, you know, was young or anything. But of course that's what they always say, and they believe, and this is, they believe 100% that they are completely free of any kind of preconditioned idea about God, never realizing that their entire life in the public school system has subtly told them exactly what to think in the sense of reverse psychology. It's basically, it's like, it's told them that they are, that they're rebelling essentially by choosing the super intellectual, you know, evolution and that all of it is just total bull and everything. And they buy it because they think that in that process they get to be prideful and look down on those silly so-and-sos that believe the lie, namely Christians. And it's so stupid to think that they have broken free of some sort of mind control and never realizing that their entire freaking life has been told what to think in that regard. And most of them nowadays know that evolution doesn't work as a model, but still, they don't see any problem with that. And it's exactly like what happens with the news nowadays. And this is like your general kind of country water cooler conversations about Iran and Iraq or whatever are totally based on reverse psychology. Most of the time, you'll hear what people say about the news and their opinions about that will be something that the news presented in such a way in order to get people to see through it the obvious lie, sort of, but they think that they figured something out by what their thought was, never realizing that they were totally intended to make that choice. And then so then it really makes it stick when they tell you what their views about the war, the world, or whatever. They just know it without a doubt because, in effect, they're saying the opposite of what was said on TV, but the TV said that opposite thing in order, you know, in very subtle ways. I don't, that's the worst way to explain that, I'm sure. And another area that the kind of reverse psychology plays out is in the conspiracy world with the 2012 Mayan calendar thing. It just blows me away that everybody thinks that they are just swimming in the sea of secret knowledge, that their tireless research figured out this thing about 2012 and the Mayan calendar. And they're just so dumbed down not to realize that they saw it on every possible TV show and at least twice a day for the last 5 years on the Discovery Channel, the Sci-Fi Channel, National Geographic, History Channel, you know, I mean, you name it. It's been on it, just shoving that down our throats. And we have the nerve to think that that's something that we're not supposed to know. And it's totally shoved down our throat. So now, if that makes any sense to you, you're like, yeah, you know, that is kind of weird that it's on all those networks that we know conclusively are owned by New World Order scum, maybe I should look into how 2012 and this whole agenda would benefit the New World Order, because that's what you got to do, guys. You got to reverse their reverse psychology in order to make sense of this. You have to look at the newspapers, which I'm sure you do, or try to. You got to look at that stuff as, this is what they want me to think. Now, it's my job to figure out, why do they want me to think that? And it's going somewhere that's just so dangerous. I mean, you can play that out logically in your mind, where this is all going, what happens if we all believe what the New World Order believes as a dogma. And it just seems to me to really, really make sense for getting these so-called truthers, the ones that are, quote, awake, to accept a world government, never realizing that it was the same world government that they were fighting against. And it happens in a very, very subtle way. They will think, it's so sorry for this being all over the place, but this is what I think. We're all going to the same place. The propaganda is going to the same place, but just in different ways. It's always that way. There's a propaganda for every level of consciousness. If you are somebody who gets everything, you know, you're sitting here talking about whatever, you know, quantum physics and everything else, there is a propaganda just for you. And same thing with the really, really, you know, just lame and dumb. But, and everybody, the truthers and the American Idol watchers are all going the same place with the propaganda, but just in different ways. And it's all world government. And this is how you would get the truthers. You would slowly indoctrinate them into the Masonic or mystery school religion, which is essentially, it's kind of like, it's deism at low levels and Luciferianism at high levels, but always this idea that we are powerful if we learn enough, that if we can just learn enough tricks and rituals and knowledge and symbols, and if we can figure out what all those pretty hermetic symbols mean, oh, it must mean something. They're so pretty. I mean, you just, there's something just so interesting there. What could it mean? I don't know. You know, it's such a snare. But anyway, follow this logically with me. If you go down that road long enough, you will eventually arrive to some kind of semi-quasi-atheistic alien-esque, or it could be, it doesn't have to be like aliens from another planet. It can be ascended masters or multidimensional beings or whatever, but that's where it's going to go eventually. And if you can get somebody there that believes in, that knows about the New World Order and everything else, then it doesn't matter what they believe, because then you can present a scenario where these things, whether they're aliens or extra-dimensional or whatever, they are the ones all of a sudden calling the shots, and they're going to come save us from some global catastrophe that all our ancients were trying to warn us about, blah, 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 blah. And we, in our pride, will believe that we have figured that out for ourselves, and we will join whatever those beings or whatever want us to do. And those beings, I can guarantee you, will admonish the New World Order. And see, that, and by admonishing the New World Order, that same propaganda works for the fluoride dum-dums. they are so, you know, out of it, they don't really know anything, and it's not anybody's fault, really, but I mean, they just because of the level of attack on people's minds, if they're not aware of this stuff, they're just going to be vegetables before too long. But those people are going to be told the same thing, that these things are here to save us, and they'll get a quick crash course in kind of, you know, the Indiana Jones crystal skulls thing. But they also will be told that the Bush regime, and they are the problem, blah, blah, blah. This is the kind of people that hold you back from being who you really can be, blah, blah, blah. Which is true, but that's what it's intended to be. Bush and his ilk are, at this point, players in a play. They're meant to be as awful and do as much damage, as create as much chaos as possible. They have a blank check to do so, because in the end, it will be blamed on religion. They're going to start a war with that is intended to have everything to do on the surface with Judaism and Islam and Christianity. And again, we all believe that and are fighting around the water cooler saying, yeah, those Jews, those Muslims, those Christians, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's intended. That's what we're supposed to do. And we never realize that what about the Masonic origins of the radicalization of Islam and all that stuff? What about the total takeover of both the Jewish government and American government by this New World Order ilk who are no closer to Christians than, you know, whatever. It's totally a mask. All of it is fake. Nothing is real. When they tell you that this new war is because of religion, you have to realize that's what you're supposed to think. They need you to do that so that at the end of that horrible bloody war that's coming, they can tell you that we are done with religion. We've seen what it's caused. We've seen what it's done. Now we can have a new godless superstate, you know? And I know some of you are out there thinking, it's like, well, religion has done all those things. What about the Crusades? Again, it's exactly the same principle. And most of you know that the Vatican is and never has been Christian. They were 400 years, that's America times two, George Washington two times, and that's when they took over Christianity, a long time afterwards. And they paganized it, and they did crusades, and they killed Christians. The Pope killed more Christians after dinner one night than all of Rome, you know, put together. I mean, it's just... That's the same thing. They aren't Christians, but they're acting in with a Christian mask on in order to create what you just thought about. Like, well, yeah, well, what about all the Crusades? That's where the Christians, that's brought us. That, my friend, is a psyop. You have been psyoped by somebody who has an anti-Christian agenda. Now, who could have an anti-Christian agenda? Could it be the New World Order? No. They created Christianity, right, to control our minds. That's right. Well, okay, but we know that they go to Bohemian Grove, and we know that they're all extremely satanic. We know that at the top levels of Masonry, it's literally Satan worship. We know that you can't really go that you can't go much higher in the Church of Satan, which is kind of an entry level satanic thing, unless you join all kinds of different levels of Masonry and you know all the Shriners, and you have to join all that stuff. So where do we fit that into these people are wanting us to believe Christianity? Because from what we can see, they are literally, and I mean this seriously, they're literally Satanists. So if we just took what we could know about that, what does Satanists do? Well, they pervert Christianity. They got upside down crosses and, you know, have child sacrifices and stuff, and they do everything against the Bible is basically what they do. So if that's true, wouldn't we expect to see, if these people are also in control of the school systems, in control of the governments, in control of the water, in control of the airwaves, wouldn't we expect to probably see some anti-Christian behavior? What if these guys were really, really good at mind control? What kind of mind control could we expect from a bunch of Satanists? Do you think it would be anti-Christian? Oh, yeah, that's right. No. And then we're all sitting here saying how we're so smart because we're not brainwashed. It's the Christians that brainwash. So why you Christians are so brainwashed? Don't you know that blah, 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 blah? Never realizing that you are so brainwashed that you cannot see your hands in front of your face. I mean, this is what kills me. When people will say that, you know, let's talk about the textual integrity of the Bible, and don't you know that it's written by men over, you know, written by Gnostics at this time or whatever, and that it's totally unreliable, it has all these errors and everything. And the thing is, those people, and I haven't met one yet, and I'm sure they're out there, don't get me wrong, but that has really actually looked into that. All that these people that have done their, quote, research, have all they've really done is listen to every Jordan Maxwell video and every Michael Tsarian thing that they can find. That's all. That's what research is nowadays. And that's research into theosophy, but that's not, you know, that's not actual research. That's listening to the line that you're supposed to believe. And you can believe that or not, but that all, but your whole resistance to that idea comes from the fact that you're thinking that no person telling us that the New World Order is bad could possibly be helping that agenda. Well, this is something you got to realize. They may not be a part of the New World Order, but they don't have to be a part of the New World Order in order to do the New World Order's bidding, because this whole system operates on ideas and concepts that are passed down to people through locks and of pride and power and the manifestation of power, which defies logic, because if you can present power, then you can insert belief on top of that power, solely on the fact that power works, so this must be true. For example, in the occult world, it doesn't matter how absolutely unprovable a lot of the theology is about, you know, that people, adherents of a lot of New Age stuff and even Satanism believe, it doesn't matter, because they're seeing this stuff work. So, therefore, because it works, that must mean that whatever I'm getting told while I'm doing it, or before I'm doing it, or during the process, or whatever the light beings or ascended masters are telling me, that must be true, because here it is, it's working. But, and so you have somebody like Michael Tsarian, who probably, you know, I am very convinced he's the same thing with Maxwell, are theosophy nutballs. They're just everything they say is in line with theosophy. I'm sure that Tsarian would probably say it's been corrupted, it's not its pure form from Blavatsky and everything or whatever. By the way, Frank Lordy is doing a really, really good series on theosophy. He's the guy to really check it out. He's already posted his first blog. You can check it out at Wise as Serpents. But so, and again, I've said this before about Tsarian. Here's a guy that grew up, you know, being taught at the age of 11, you know, was in mystery schools being taught the tarot, and was told he was, you know, gifted in this way of, you know, divination and all this stuff. And his mother was a psychic, according to him, and a very popular psychic. And that's, you know, whatever. I'm not saying anything about that. All I'm saying about that is that here's a guy who is biased. You know, if you were a Christian and at the age of 11 were being taught how to be a preacher, and you would call that person biased. But for some reason, Tsarian's not. Now, I'm just saying that Tsarian probably believes, as a true believer, in all this total garbage. And I mean that in the nicest possible way, because he really takes in a lot of stuff that doesn't make any sense, and then just blinds people with the science of Freud or something. With Freud, I don't want to get into it. But I guess what I'm saying with that is that his hatred for Jehovah, as he a lot of time refers to him, comes from early on in his childhood, you know, reading these passages of the Bible where Jehovah doesn't like psychics, Jehovah doesn't like my mom. Well, that, I don't think that I like this Jehovah very much if he doesn't like Mother Dearest, you know. That's a total brainwash, you know. But it's not necessarily coming from the Illuminati. And you have to realize who the Illuminati are and what tools they implement to do their bidding. And I'm telling you right now that it's spiritual. This whole thing is spiritual. There are millions, I don't even know how many of these thousand-year-old demons bent on destruction and assigned to each and every one of us, and that have been assigned to many people in the past, can imitate them, can do a lot of things, can do a lot of supernatural things, and are completely content to let you think that it's you that's doing them, and that you're special, and that you have power, and that you can do all these things. They're totally cool with you believing that, because it just gets you further and further down the road of opening doors for them. Because this whole system is serving them. They need our free will to get into our plane. They have a big, big, clear agenda. But they need the minds of men and women to get them further into this world. And the reason that there is such an effort to discredit Christianity, and there always has been, is because it's a spiritual war. And we have been given authority over their biggest and best weapon, and that is that other dimension that are operating with a serious agenda to create a New World Order, because they want their phoenix to rise out of the ashes of the chaos of this great war that's going to look like Armageddon, so that they can make us think that this new ruler is the savior, and that they're going to force us to worship him. So they've got a pretty clear agenda. And we have to realize that we have the tools to beat them on a local level in their lives, in our lives, in the lives of our loved ones, and yes, even in the lives of the deception, like in this truth movement. That's something I encourage you to pray against, the spiritual forces that are darkening the eyes of these people to these just half-assed lies. And it's going to hold them to the grave and steal them, if not for the breaking free and God benevolently shining a light on all this to wake them up. And we have the power to pray against evil, because Jesus gave it to us. In Luke 10, verse 19, he says, "Behold, I give unto you power to tread on serpents and scorpions and over all the power of the enemy, and nothing shall by any means hurt you. Notwithstanding, in this rejoice not that the spirits are subject unto you, but rather rejoice because your names are written in heaven." I want to read just one more thing. This is from 1 Timothy 4. This I think really speaks to where we are and where we're going. 1 Timothy 4:1, it says, "Now the Spirit speaketh expressly that in the latter times some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils, speaking lies in hypocrisy, having their conscience seared with a hot iron." And I can't tell you how that's what I feel like, you know, with a lot of people. They have had their conscience seared, and it doesn't matter what they hear, they will choose to believe a lie over the truth, because I don't know why. I guess because they personally gave heed to it. They gave themselves over to these doctrines of devils. So, but I just really encourage everyone to if any of this makes any kind of sense to you, and this is the first time you've heard anything like this, go check out, and look, I know that, like me, when I was looking for the truth, I mean, and I'm not saying that I found the truth, but there was a big hole in my research, and there were holes everywhere. I had a lot of things, you know, I had a lot of things that I knew about, but none of them fit together, because none of it really made sense together. There had to be a unification to explain why all these things were happening in the various ways that they are. You can't to be able to put together agendas and mind control and, you know, all the stuff with, you know, the terrorism and false flag terrorism and the everything. I mean, it goes so much further beyond that. But one of the things that started to get me to figure this out was hearing Russ Dizdar. So if you haven't yet checked that out, type in Russ Dizdar into Google Video, and just to type it in Google and cross-reference it with video or whatever. Russ Dizdar, RussDizdar. And there's a movie that you should watch, and it covers a lot of stuff. And I think that it will slowly, and it doesn't do it all in one shot, but if you can just absorb a lot of the different things in that video, something will click. You'll at least be able to put one puzzle piece together with another puzzle piece that you have, and you'll start to see the level of deception that's going on with some other things, because it's crucial, because it's not going to be okay if you just have you know, your Berkey water filter and your food and whatnot, because that's not the agenda, is to starve you out, and I mean, it is partially eugenics and all that, but it has to do with something that these high level spiritual entities want from us, and it's not what you think a lot of times. And I think that we have this idea that we would know what they would want, or we believe them too much, I think. You know, the entire history of the world has always, in human history anyway, we have always had stories, myths. We've always talked about the other side, the other dimension. You know, there were always people in every walk of life that were mediums, or, you know, necromancers, or said that they talked with the spirits, and we have always believed them. And, you know, I mean, even today, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, BS out there, but we all still agree, yeah, there's probably something like a ghost out there, and it seems like some people are, you know, more prone to it than others. There's always been mediums and channeling. This kind of thing has always occurred. So it's reasonable, scientifically reasonable, to assume that there really is another spiritual beings out there, spiritual beings out there that we need to. If all this is coming down, and the way I think it is, it becomes at the utmost importance to figure out what they are doing, because what we can just tell with just empirical data here that they are very concerned about our dogmas. They very much want us to think and believe certain things. So that is red flags all over the field for me. And then it becomes crucial to know what their system's like, what rule systems do they play by. And that information is all out there, but you don't have to go with the way that they're telling you to go to find it. And I'm telling you, the word occult does mean hidden, but it means hidden from the practitioner. They're the ones that don't know what they're doing or what the source of all that stuff is until way, way much later, when it's far too late. It's never too late. Let me tell you that right now. It's never too late. It doesn't matter if you sign deals or over, you know, in blood or whatever you've done. It doesn't matter what you've done. Nothing is too late. If they've ever told you it's too late, if anybody's ever said that, they are a liar. Know that right out, that is the biggest lie that's ever been told. There's nothing that you've done that is any worse than the smallest thing that I'm going to do in the next 5 minutes in this grand scheme of things. I know that's not necessarily true, but you know what I'm saying. So, you can end all that. It's just a matter of, again, free will. That's the most important thing going right now. It's your free will, who you choose to serve. And this is a matter of kingdoms. And when we take the authority of the kingdom that we're in on my side, you know, that's like saying if I came to your city back in the Middle Ages and I had orders from the king, you know, I would present that like that. I'm here in the name of the king. Now you have to do what he said. And that's exactly the kind of authority that we need to take over these spiritual entities. And they're scared to death of you having that authority. But in order to get that authority, you've got to join the true kingdom of heaven and earth, the one that will never end. The true king is coming back to rule. And you can serve him now. And you can essentially plug that emptiness, that hole, because you're meant to run on that kingdom. We're born into it. And I'm going to play a clip here a little later that's really going to help, I think, kind of understand a particular aspect of that in a roundabout way. All right. Let me take a quick break and I'll be right back.
That's taken together with a reason why people believe, desperate to believe, together with the fact that you don't need actually a God, in a sense amounts to an argument against the existence of God.
Well, I guess I don't see that. I mean, why doesn't that commit the genetic fallacy of trying to say that by explaining how a belief originates, you thereby show the belief to be false? Even if it were true that belief in the existence of God were the product of fear and anxiety and so forth, which I don't for a minute admit, but even if it were, that's simply a genetic fallacy to say that because that's the way the belief originates,
but that's
that therefore the belief is false.
But that's only one half of the argument. I'm not saying that that alone is adequate, and I'm not saying that the fact that science can account for everything alone is also adequate. But taken together, the fact that that science is omnipotent, and the fact that I can understand why people like you desperately want to believe in God, that is an argument against the existence of God.
But two fallacious arguments put together don't make a sound argument, right?
They are, but do you deny that science cannot account for everything?
Yes, I do deny that science
can't. So what can't it account for?
Well, had you brought that up in the debate, I had a number of examples that I was going to give. I think there are a good number of things that cannot be scientifically proven, but that we're all rational to accept. Let me list five. Logical and mathematical truths cannot be proven by science. Science presupposes logic and math, so that to try to prove them by science would be arguing in a circle. Metaphysical truths, like there are other minds other than my own, or that the external world is real, or that the past was not created 5 minutes ago with an appearance of age, are rational beliefs that cannot be scientifically proven. Ethical beliefs about statements of value are not accessible by the scientific method. You can't show by science whether the Nazi scientists in the camps did anything evil as opposed to the scientists in Western democracies. Aesthetic judgments, number four, cannot be accessed by the scientific method because the beautiful, like the good, cannot be scientifically proven. And finally, most remarkably, would be science itself. Science cannot be justified by the scientific method. Science is permeated with unprovable assumptions. For example, in the special theory of relativity, the whole theory hinges on the assumption that the speed of light is constant in a one-way direction between any two points A and B. But that strictly cannot be proven. We simply have to assume that in order to hold to the theory.
But you're missing the whole...
So put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So okay. None of these beliefs can be scientifically proven, and yet
this is Revere Radio Network Tampa.
Okay, we're back. That was William Lane Craig, who was talking in the break there. William Lane Craig is an incredible guy. He's a philosopher and just a great, brilliant man. He's kind of the guy you would choose to go up against the top thinkers and atheists in some kind of skeptic debate situation. He's got a podcast on iTunes as well, but he's a very, very amazing guy. So check out William Lane Craig if you get a chance. And he's got a lot of material available online, a lot of debates and a lot of things. So just dig into William Lane Craig. He'll definitely make your faith a lot stronger. One thing I wanted to talk about here, and I'll do this real quickly because I want to play a clip. And I know what I'm going to say is semi-heavy, but it's not. It's something I feel like I should do. I want to talk about, I guess... this war that we're having with ourselves. I mean, there's a spiritual war, yes, but there's also a war against our flesh, for lack of a better word. And so much of what we do is just because it feels good. I remember when I made a list one time of, and I encourage you to do the same thing. If you have whatever it is that you do, that you know that it's keeping you outside that circle of God's will, that when you do, that's that you're kind of in a sense on your own when you're susceptible to a lot of things. But we all have these things that if we made a list, like I did when I made a list when I quit drinking, I had on one side of the column all the things that would get better, all the reasons that I needed to quit drinking, and I mean I sat down for an hour or more writing down those things. I mean I drink more than anybody I've ever met. And for a long time. So I just had a lot of things that were going to get better and that would be better and that wouldn't happen and the things that would blah, 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 blah. It was just a list on top of other things And then when it came to write the pros on the other side of the column, the reasons why I should continue to drink, I had one thing, and it was essentially because it feels good. Now, you could say because I want to or something, but you can reduce a lot of those things to their lowest common denominator. It's like, well, why do you want to do it? Well, because I just like it. Well, why do you like it? Blah, blah, blah. Because it feels good. And you can do that with so much stuff. We got one side of the column, all kinds of logical reasons, and it's every bit of logic. And then on the other column, it feels good. And everything that is keeping us from doing all these things that we can do has to do with what feels good. And it doesn't help that culture has basically told us that it's cool to just do what feels good. I mean, just do it, you know? I was thinking on driving, I was like, I bet that they just used that slogan, not because Nike used it or sold shoes, but just so they could plaster that up everywhere, on everything, on the TV, always, just do it, just do it, just do it, you know? Anyway, it doesn't matter. So I think we need to wake up every day and really realize that that's what we need to do. We need to kind of war against ourselves and to deny ourselves, you know, and if that doesn't ring true to you right now, realize that the opposite of that has been in every culture known to be wrong. It's always been wrong to be completely, totally indulgent in everything, never resisting anything. In the earliest of tribes ever, it's always been unproductive, it's been wrong, it's been unattractive, it's been a sign of weakness. And the ability to resist those things has always been a sign of nobility, a sign of control, a sign of strength. So which one do we want to be? And I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying I can do it. I can't do it. I am totally not doing it. But at the same time, I have been committed to trying to figure out how to do it. Not just to make it all okay once I do it, but to figure out how to stop it, how to get to a place where I'm making it every day, you know, and then more days, and then, you know, just, and I'm not saying that those days don't come where you totally slip up, but I think that you can beat them. I mean, it's not like something you got to deal with for the rest of your life. I think that there is a place that you can beat it. And I know I did with alcohol. I mean, I don't have any, I mean, it's been 3 years and I'm totally set free from that whole slavery. And that's what it was. I mean, I look at that totally now as like, I mean, I don't even have the slightest desire to get back into that at all. I mean, there is no level of temptation that is available. But it's just, it's something that can sneak back up on you, and just the little things like that with a lot of different things, whatever it is. So what can we do? I encourage you to do the one thing that we can do as Christians, and that is we can resist them. We can put on the full armor of God and resist those arrows. That's something that is not necessarily available to the non-Christian. We have supernatural power to be set free from that. And I think that that's a big kind of different change of mindset too, is to understand that that's what's occurring here. We're not being denied something. We're being set free from something that is slavery, that is bondage, that is keeping us from being who we are. In the case, there's a recent case of somebody that I was talking to and that I love very much that was just, you know, had a serious problem with, you know, alcohol. They were the kind of person that probably had a lot to give, and in the kingdom of God, and was very well versed in the Bible, and very well, much knew, you know, everything very well, but also was a total stinking drunk. And in my case, when I was a drunk, I was completely canceled out. I had all these great ideas. I thought I was going to do something, whatever, you know, but it didn't matter. I was at that the entire 7 years or whatever, I was completely canceled out. And for some of us, by not shaking that fleshly prison, we're in essence doing the will of the enemy, because we're not doing the will of God. Our gifts can be so well used in the kingdom of God that by not doing those gifts, by letting the devil keep you at bay, just canceling you out, you are losing, and he is winning. So kick that out of there, you know? I mean, just totally buck that whole process. And you can do it by prayer. You can pray for conviction of the sins. You can pray to get strength to be delivered from it. But just get down on your knees and pray. And I hope it happens that day that you make that decision, because that's what a lot of times it has to happen. I know in my case, I actually knew I would always require somebody to give me that boost, that ultimatum, that thing. I always thought it was going to come from the band. I thought they were just going to be like, hey, dude, you got to quit drinking. But that actually never happened. It came in another way, in another form. But for some of you, I got to tell you, you may not have the luxury of some kind of ultimatum. That may be something you're waiting for, some kind of thing to happen. Oh, once this happens, then I'll do it. I know that once this happens, I'll do it. We don't have the luxury of time anymore. This is a very serious situation out here. You cannot be held at bay anymore. You have to get out of it. You have to be your own ultimatum. It's not easy. It'll be an incredible sign of strength, but you have to make that decision. You have to be your own ultimatum. You have to make the decision and then stop it. And, you know, in the case of alcohol and drugs and things like that, cigarettes, the thing that is the most important advice that I could give you is that you have to mentally get over that hypothetical cigarette or drink if the occasion is special enough. You cannot allow yourself that hypothetical drink that in one day, if this such and such happens, then I can. You cannot have it. You have to totally be cool with that drink never coming. And you have to, and if you don't do that, you won't quit. I guarantee it, because that one drink and hypothetical drink will come soon. And then one will come sooner, and then the occasions will stop being all that special, and then you're going to be right back where you were before you even knew it. It's just, it's the way it goes. I mean, it's tried and tested, and it's the way it goes. So in order to really do it, you have to mentally have given it up. You have to want to is the main thing. Nobody can stop you if you want to. And I encourage you, make a list and just prove to yourself all these things that are going to immediately get better, all the things that you need to do, all the reasons, and then do it. Then don't sit on it. Do it, because there's a lot to do in this life. We don't have a lot of time to do it. Okay, I'm going to play a clip here. This is from Chuck Missler. This was from Chuck Missler's got a ton of audio online, you might realize. But one of the places you can find a lot of Chuck Missler audio is firefighters.org. One of the, if the premium resource for really great Christian lectures and audio and stuff. It's got a ton of Chuck Missler on it. And this was from his conclusion to the book of Jacob, which is James. But anyway, he said something that really, really made me want to play this. And he was talking about the brazen serpent that was raised on, that Moses raised in the desert. And I just always thought this was great, because a lot of people try to point to this as some kind of, well, what about that, and they have all kinds of conspiracy theories about it, never realizing that this, how significant this was. And that's one thing I really want to show to a lot of people. A lot of people tell me and, write letters and stuff about, the Bible and how they have this kind of esoteric thing figured out about it. And they kind of suggest that they have, and I think they get frustrated when Christians, like, kind of out of hand disregard it, and they just think it's because they're brainwashed. But what they don't realize is that Christians actually read the Bible, sometimes every day. So when they hear something that is taken out of context, that like a lot of these things are, that like if somebody will say, well, Jesus fed the people with two fish and this and that, and they'll say, well, that's Pisces, and they think they've got you pretty well figured out there. But then Christians will say, well, that's stupid, because Christians know that Jesus, a couple weeks later, did it with more than two fish and more loaves. So a different number of fish and a different number of loaves. So, that's the kind of thing that people don't really consider. And this is one of those things that I've heard used, but the real story, if you actually look at the symbols that are being used and what you can check of what the Bible has already used and what they're intending to be here, it's an incredible, rich, amazing thing. And it's the only way that Chuck Missler could do it. I mean, this guy can really make you want to go read the Bible. So anyway, I'm going to play this and I'm going to be out with it. So also, I will link in the show notes where you can download the this entire conclusion. It's about an hour long, and he goes through, like he does, he just skips around everywhere, but he hits some really, really interesting things all through this. I guess it's just a conclusion to the Book of James study, but he just hits everything. So I'll link it in the show notes where you can download the whole thing. Take it easy. You can email me at chris@conspiracyclose.com. Go to Revelations Radio Network. Go to Revere Radio Network. Go to the YouTube site, youtube.com/nowhere to run 1984. I'll see you around. I'll see you at the Frank and Chris Show Wednesday night. Take it easy.
But before I go on, I'd like you to turn with me to Numbers 21. In Numbers 21, we have an episode while Israel was wandering in the wilderness in which people were rebellious. In verse 6, the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people. And they bit the people, and many people of Israel died. Verse 7. Therefore the people came to Moses and said, "We have sinned, for we have spoken against the Lord and against thee. Pray unto the Lord that he may take away the serpents from us." And Moses prayed for the people. Verse 8. And the Lord said unto Moses, "Make thee a fiery serpent." And here the term implies brass. Brass was the metal in that culture that could sustain heat. So brass things represented a resistance to fire, and that's why Levitically those things in the tabernacle that dealt with real fire, like the brazen altar, were brass. Gold was only inside. It was used differently. Brass is synonymous with judgment or fire, in effect, Levitically speaking. But anyway, "Make thee a fiery serpent and set it upon a pole. And it shall come to pass that everyone that is bitten, when he looketh upon it, shall live." Moses made a serpent of bronze and put it upon a pole. And it came to pass that if a serpent had bitten any man, when he beheld the serpent of bronze, he lived. Strange, strange story when you think about it. Because if God's going to save the people, great. Why did God resort to this rather weird code? It's a code. What's a code? It's a set of symbols. His was a symbol. He made a brass serpent, put it on a pole. If you looked at the pole, you were healed. If you didn't look at the pole, sorry, sayonara. God, you know, in other words, he asked you to do something. It was simple. So that's the story. And it may, you say, what's going on here? Fortunately, the most competent commentator in the universe has given you the explanation. Turn to John chapter 3. The Bible is always best interpreted by itself. In John chapter 3, the number one teacher in Israel, a guy by the name of Nicodemus, comes to Jesus by night. And in the conversation that ensues, we learn that he is the teacher. Not a teacher, the teacher in Israel. And this is the famous passage where Jesus says, "You must be born again." In fact, this is important enough. Let's just start at verse 3. Jesus answered and said unto him, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, except a man be born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God." Nicodemus said unto him, "How can a man be born when he is old? Can he enter the womb in his mother's womb a second time? Obviously, he knows better. That's his way of getting across the question. What do you mean? Jesus answered, "Verily, verily, I say unto thee, except a man be born of water and of the Spirit, he cannot enter into the kingdom of God. That which is born of the flesh is flesh. That which is born of the Spirit is spirit. Marvel not that I said he must be born again. Where the wind bloweth, where it willeth, thou hearest the sound of it, but can tell from where it cometh and when it goeth. So is everyone that is born of the Spirit." Nicodemus answered and said unto him, "How can these things be?" And Jesus said unto him, "Art thou the teacher of Israel, and knowest not these things? Verily, verily, I say unto thee, we speak that which we do know and testify to that which we have seen, and ye receive not our witness. If I have told you earthly things and ye believe not, how shall ye believe if I tell you heavenly things? And no man hath ascended up to heaven but he that came down from heaven, even the Son of Man who is in heaven." In other words, the guy is standing in front of him. And then you get to this enigmatic verse 14. Jesus continues, "And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have eternal life. For God so loved the world." Now, verse 16, I think you're probably familiar with, right? For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life. And on he goes. Now we all remember John 3:16, but verse 14 leads up to that. And the model that Jesus presents to Nicodemus, a well-trained Jew, draws upon that experience from Numbers 21. Just as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, so shall the Son of Man be lifted up. He's talking literally here now. Literally. You say, well, gee, it's a symbol. Yes, but is he speaking literally? When everywhere in the scripture that a prophet of God interprets the scripture, it's always literally. Always literally. And Jesus is raised up literally on a pole. And whoever looked at him, trusted him, would not perish. Now, turn it around the other way. God, back in Numbers 21, in contriving this response to Moses' prayer, develops that imagery. Okay, Moses, make a brass serpent, put it on a pole, and whoever looks at it, trusts it, will be healed. God is setting what I call a macro code. It's an anticipatory code. The end. Now, so you all know the story. Now, you may not realize this. The serpent on the pole became an ancient symbol of healing in the days of the Torah, days of Moses. Later, that legend or that story, I shouldn't say that legend, that story, takes a Greek form where it's called Asclepius, the god of healing. The Greeks picked up this from the earlier tradition of the Hebrews. And the idea of a pole with a serpent on it became a symbol of what? Healing. In Alexandria, in the Greek legend, that's why I use the term legend before, in the Greek legend of Asclepius, that's the symbol. Now, what's kind of interesting, most of you probably have seen on license plates the little medical symbol, which is a pole with two serpents. See, somebody who is designing the symbol for the Army Medical Corps, now you'll see nurses, sometimes they'll see a pole with a single serpent. That's correct. But you often see the double serpent. That's unfortunate, because whoever designed that way, way, way back didn't do their homework. Because the single serpent on the pole is Asclepius, a symbol of the god of healing in the Greek thing. The two serpents on the pole is a symbol of the god of Hermes, which is the god of commerce. And every time I see a doctor's license plate with the two serpents, So anyway, the reason I get into this is because I want you to turn with me to 2 Kings 18. Now we're moving here from the Torah, the days of Moses, to 2 Kings 18. We're in the reign of Hezekiah, king of Israel. Or I should say king of Judah. Anyway, king of Judah, excuse me. And I want to get down to 2 Kings 18. And under Hezekiah, we're going to see, he reigns over Judah, and he's going to have a major, major revival. And verse 4 says something kind of interesting. It says, he removed the high places and broke the images. Now, by the way, you should understand that God instructed them they never were to put their sacred places at the top of hills. Never at the top of hills. Even the temple was not at the top of Moriah. It was at a saddle point. Because the tops of mountains were associated with idol worship. That's where all the pagan nations built their idols. It was on the top of a mountain. He wanted their practices to be different. Throughout the Old Testament, you hear speak of the groves. The groves were not groves of trees. They were trees that were trimmed like phallic symbols. This had to do with the sex orgies and the form of worship of the pagan idols. So when it says he removed the high places, what that means is he destroyed all the pagan artifacts that were on the tops of these hills. And he broke the images, that is the idols. And he cut down the idols and broke in pieces the bronze serpent that Moses had made. For unto those days the children of Israel did burn incense to it. And he called it Nehushtan, a thing of brass. This imagery, one other thing I forgot to point out, maybe I should just insert here. Jesus said to Nicodemus, as Moses raised the serpent in the wilderness, so shall the Son of Man be raised up. There's a subtlety there that is very deliberate on the part of God. Because the serpent on the cross, the brass serpent, was a symbol of what? Sin. And Paul tells us in his Corinthian letters that Jesus was made sin. You think, gee, isn't that a strange symbol of Jesus Christ? A brass serpent on a pole. No, it isn't a strange symbol if you really understand who he was and what he was doing. That he, we have no ability to grasp what it means when it says he was made sin for us.